Howard Thurman, the famous civil rights activist, would always say, you know, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is for more people to come alive. And so the things that make you come alive is play. It's those play moments.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Jeff Harry is a play expert who shows individuals and companies how to tap into their true selves through the art of play. He's inspired staff at companies like Google and Microsoft to infuse more play into their day-to-day. In 2020, Engagedly selected Jeff as one of the top 100 HR influencers to address toxicity in the workplace. He's been featured in the New York Times, Soul Pancake, and on CNN. Jeff believes, quote, "We already have many of the answers we seek, and by simply unleashing our inner child, we can find our purpose, and in turn, help to create a better world."
I am so happy to have a Jeff Harry from Rediscover Your Play here to talk to us about play and why it's important not only at home, but in the workspace and everywhere. And I'm so happy to have you here, Jeff.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited about this.
Yes. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about Rediscover Your Play?
Sure. So Rediscover Your Play is an organization that combines positive psychology and play to help teams navigate very difficult conversations, like how to deal with toxicity at work, how to deal with office politics, how to get your staff in flow, how to deal with that inner critic, that mean voice in your head. Yeah. But everything basically uses a play-oriented perspective to address major challenges. And then when I'm not working with a lot of teams and Fortune 500 companies, then I work with a lot of individuals of just really like rediscovering what makes them come alive, because like that is where all of the magic is, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we're all striving to be. And as my business mentor, Stephen Worley, always says, it's like, don't you just want to get paid to be yourself?
Right. Yeah.
So like, yeah. So let's figure out how to do that.
That's wonderful. Now, so tell us, how can you maybe give us a little background? How did you get on this path to, on this positive psychology, Rediscover Your Play path? How did that happen?
Sure. So let me tell you the Batman origin story.
Way back. Yeah.
So do you remember the movie Big with Tom Hanks?
Yeah, sure.
So I saw
the piano,
that.
Dancing on the piano, right?
Yes. And he dances on the piano. And remember in that movie, once he danced on the piano, he was dancing with a toy CEO. And then that CEO offered him a job to work at a toy company where he could just get to play with toys for a living. Mm. And I saw that in third grade. And I'm like, that's a job? And I was like, oh, it's over. And I went to FEO Schwartz. Danced on a piano. No one offered me a job. Very disappointed. So then I went home that day and started writing toy companies that day. And I just didn't stop. Like, I wrote them all the way through high school. I was spamming toy companies before spam was a thing. Like, and I would write it on a word processor. That's how old I am. I'm right here, my word processor. I would send them these 5-page letters with my ideas. And then no one would get back to me, or they would send me a form letter back because I think they thought I was an adult. And then finally, I think sophomore year of high school, someone wrote me back and was like, you should go into mechanical engineering, which I really should not have listened to. But whatever, I did it anyway. Went into engineering, graduated, and then went and got in the toy industry. And I don't know if you've ever gotten exactly what you've always wanted and then been so disappointed when you got there. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, no toys, no play, no fun. Mm-hmm. Just adults. Like, it felt like they were selling microwaves or socks. Like, you know, the cubicle at padded walls. Why do we have padded walls? Like, this was, I felt so like creepy and weird. And I was in New York and 9/11 happened. And I'm like, I don't want to die in a cubicle. Like, I'm just like sitting there thinking, what am I doing here? I thought this was supposed to be joyful. Mm. I left New York, moved to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, bumped into an organization on Craigslist teaching kids engineering with Lego. So they were playing with Lego for a living. They were just playing. And I was like, dude, I'm going to do this. And it was only paying $150 a week. There were only seven people there at the time. But they were playing. And I was like, I'm going to make this a thing. And then I was able to make it a thing. We grew it from seven people to 400 people.
What?
It's the largest Lego-inspired STEM organization in the country. And we did this all by playing. No business plan. No idea what we were doing the majority of the time. Experimenting. We picked people that we thought were fun. We picked cities that we thought were fun. We'd be like, New York, yes. Austin, yes. Anyone want to go to Wyoming? No. Okay, that's how we decided to make decisions. Like, is there fun there? Let's pursue the fun. And, you know, we experimented a lot. We failed a lot. But because we got so large and we were teaching so many kids in Silicon Valley, Facebook, Google, Adobe all started paying attention to us. And we're like, hey, do you do team building events? And we're like, of course we do. Even though we didn't, we just said yes to everything.
Yeah.
And for the next decade, I was running team building events with the largest companies in the world. But the thing that I found at all these companies was at the same time that they claimed that they were innovative and disruptive and taking risks and all the stuff that was on their posters, on their wall, they weren't doing any of that. They had not created psychologically safe spaces for people to actually take risks, for them to actually play. So I used positive psychology and play now and Rediscover Your Play to navigate those hard conversations and create that safe space for people to actually be more themselves at work.
Wow. I love this idea of building a company based on having fun. I don't think I've ever heard of that. That's amazing. Okay. So I have so many questions, but let's start with how do you define play, Jeff? Yes. Does that mean like literally playing with Legos or dolls or?
No. So I answer this in a very broad way, right? So play is any joyful act where you forget about time, where there is no purpose, there is no result, where you don't have anxiety about the future, you don't have regrets about the past, you are simply in flow, right? Okay. Writers get this.
Yeah.
When they're writing and they lose track of time.
Right.
Right? And I was saying this recently to someone because they were like, well, I don't play. I was working with a client and they were a lawyer. And she was like, I don't play. And I go, what do you do? And she goes, I take people that hate each other and I get them to agree on one thing. And I was like, tell me more. And as she was telling me, she got really excited. And I was like, that's your play.
Yeah.
So play looks different to everybody. But if it's something where you are creating something that didn't exist before and you're forgetting about time and you feel like you're in a state of flow and truly feeling alive, that is play. That is
how it is. So a lot of times we have those moments or those activities. For example, someone could love writing or they could love playing their saxophone. But that's always just like a hobby. And it's something that they don't really spend a whole lot of time on because they're so invested in like what they call living real life. Like I have to make a living. I have to pay my bills. I have to blah, 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 blah. So what do you say to the person that it really needs the play, but they just don't know how to manage the time to actually play? Like how do we incorporate it more into our lives?
Dr. Stuart Brown, the doctor of play, says the opposite of play is depression. It's not work, it's depression.
Wow.
So when we are able to tap into our flow work, into our play work, it actually has a ripple effect on all of the other work that we do. It has a huge benefit to us. And if you actually start your day with play, like I said, like I start my day making TikTok videos. It has no ROI value. It has no productivity value, but it sets my brain. It starts to set patterns in my brain to positively prime my day to look at all my challenges as play, it's a much easier day for me. And then I ask, my friend Desiree taught me to ask this question whenever something good is happening, to ask this question from a place of curiosity: how can it get any better than this? Right? So when I ask myself, oh, I just made this TikTok video. Oh, how can it get any better than this? Oh, then I hopped on this podcast with my friend Sam earlier. How can it get any better than this? Oh, now Ebony and I are having this conversation. How can it get any better than this? You know, like it has a, you know, snowballing effect. But the opposite of that, when people say they had a bad day, I challenge that, because what you had was not a bad day, but bad moments. And what our brain does is we ruminate about those bad moments. So thoughts usually last between 9 seconds and 90 seconds. But when you have a bad moment, then you keep thinking about it all day long, right? And then you look for other bad moments. Your brain starts to prime for other bad moments.
Yeah.
And then you add up all those bad moments and you have a bad day.
Right.
But if you simply flip it by asking yourself, how can it get any better than this? You can totally change your day and potentially change your life.
Right. Because asking how can it get any better than this, are you challenging yourself to find fun ways to make it better? Is that what's happening?
You're just asking your brain to be curious about how it actually can be. And then from a positive psychology standpoint, your brain is always looking for patterns, so then it will look for other patterns.
Right.
Why mantras work, right? And a lot of people are like, mantras are woo-woo. No, if you say a mantra that you're like, I am going to move into a new house this year, and you keep telling yourself over and over again that, and you start sharing that with the world, all of a sudden, then many people will start to being like, hey, I heard you're looking for this new house, and they're going to help you to get it.
Right. So you're kind of, you're planting that like seed in your head so that you're just aware. Oh, okay. I like that. That's wonderful. Gosh. Do you incorporate meditation at all? Does that come into play here?
Well, so what's interesting is, so, you know, when people ask, well, how do I play more? You know, I learned this from my play mentor, Gwen Gordon, who says, you can't play when you're in an anxiety-ridden state.
Like
if you're angry, you can't play. If you're sad, it's very difficult for you to play. And what she taught me was like, you actually adopt the nervous system of the person that took care of you the most.
Yes, so, I heard that too. Oh my God.
Right? So if they didn't know how to soothe themselves,
right? Yeah.
And you don't, and you have to identify that, right? You have to like kind of address that. But that's the first thing, you have to actually soothe yourself before you can play.
Right.
You know, whether that's like taking showers and then all of a sudden you get a rush of ideas. Is that morning pages? Is that walking? Is that shooting hoops? Like whatever the thing is, some action thing to get you out of your head. And then after you learn how to soothe yourself, then I challenge people to get bored. And what I mean by that is like, stop binge watching Netflix, stop looking at social media. And I'm not saying forever, I'm talking about for like an hour.
Right.
And if you're like, I don't have time to do that, it's just like, look at your phone tracks how many hours you're on your phone. Usually it's 4 hours a day we're on our phone, maybe even more. Mm-hmm. So you do have time. And the reason why you block that out is we get more information in a day than people got in the 1950s in an entire year. And all that information is telling you, you're not enough. You know, you should buy this, get another Amazon Prime product, and it will fill your soul, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't hear your intuition. You can't hear that inner child. You can't hear that inner writer in you that wants to get out. So I challenge people to get bored. Now, you can use meditation. That's one way, right? But, or you could just get bored like when you were a kid, because if you think about it, when you were a kid, when you were bored, that's when you had your best ideas.
Right.
So simply not being aware to not let all these information in, just sit there for like 5 minutes or just see what comes up, or walk and not have all these other, stop multitasking. And just all of a sudden that inner writer is going to be like, we need to write that story. Right. Yo, we've been putting off writing that blog post for 3 months.
Yeah.
And as Elizabeth Gilbert talks about, right, mm-hmm. genius visits us. Mm-hmm. And if you don't birth that genius, that moves on to somebody else. So when you get angry that someone wrote your story, it's because that genius visited you and you didn't honor it.
And you were like, oh, no, I don't feel like writing it right now. I'd rather binge watch Netflix, which you totally can.
Right.
But then you can't create from that amazing place of flow that your inner child is constantly asking you to create from.
Right. Oh, gosh. I love that. Yeah. So meditation can put you in that space of relaxation so that you can't – because, yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that. When I'm anxious or upset or sad, it's – I don't want to write.
Right.
At all.
Right.
And sometimes if I'm really mad, I'll write to get it out.
Right.
But it's not anything necessarily creative. It's just right. Like this.
And you shouldn't force it because then you'll have a bad association with writing.
Right.
And the reason why I say get bored as opposed to just doing meditation is because getting bored is easier, right? Mm-hmm. Meditation is one form, but yeah. Some people be like, I hate meditation. Exactly. Then don't do meditation. Yeah. Go walk. Go shoot. Just do something, you know? Go hang out with your stuffed animals. Like, whatever you do, go hang out with your kids. But get to a point. Go wash some dishes. You'll be amazed how many ideas you have while you're washing dishes.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, it doesn't, you know, play a lot of times is just simply the idea of allowing yourself to hear what that inner soul is doing.
Yeah.
But you have to be quiet enough in order to hear it.
And, you know, I was recently, I'm going to hold the mic like this because I'm not sure if you could hear me all the way back here. I was recently talking to a psychologist and she was saying that usually when we're in the shower, we get some of our best ideas because in the shower, we're so relaxed. Like the water is warm. We're in a space where no one can really bother us.
Yep.
And that's when all the ideas start to flow. And so that's...
We look at our phones as much as we try. You know, we can't multitask. And again, it's about soothing. What soothes you? So identify that for yourself.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So then we kind of started to talk about... the benefits of play, but can you maybe elaborate a little bit about that? Like, why is play so important in my life? Why should I incorporate it?
If you think of your most memorable moments of your life, they're play moments, right? So why would we not be trying to create more of those, right? At the end of your life, you are not going to be thinking about your accomplishments. You are not going to be thinking about how many articles you wrote or how many books you wrote. You'll be thinking about those play moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about like there, I love what Viola Davis says. Viola was speaking in front of this audience at this conference I was at. And she says, with every decision we make, you either claim who you are or you end up chasing your worth for the rest of your life. How many people do you know chasing their worth, looking for external validation, constantly looking for others to be like, is this okay? Can I be me?
Yeah.
Instead of like, and what she did, she owned who she was. And that's why she's so successful, because she's just owning who she is.
Yeah.
And Howard Thurman, the famous civil rights activist, would always say, you know, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is for more people to come alive. And so the things that make you come alive is play. It's those play moments. And if we're thinking about, well, you know, I don't know if this is true, this sounds a lot of woo-woo, look at the regrets of the dying. One of the biggest regrets of the dying is I wish I had the courage to live the life that I wanted to live, not the life that others had for me, right? You do that by allowing yourself to play more, to actually being more of you, to be your nerdy, weird, strange self, because that's where all the dopeness is. That's where all the creativity is. That's where all the genius is. You know, Gay Hendricks talks a lot about this too, where, you know, we have our zone of incompetence, things we're not good at, zone of competence, things we're average at, zone of excellence, which a lot of us focus on, things that we're good at and we get external praise for. But our zone of genius is the play. It's when we're the most ourselves, and it's actually what the world actually needs. So when you're in a state of flow and writing from a place of flow, you know for a fact that that piece of writing, when you share it with the world, will have a ripple effect on the world.
So, you know, okay, so what's so interesting about this is when we're in that state of flow and we're in that state of play, that's where all of our genius is. That's where all our creativity is. That's where all of our, like, that's where our greatest energy is. It's so interesting and sad how it seems that we are, I don't know if it's something that we're taught or we just kind of naturally want to disengage with play when we reach a particular age. Like it's looked upon as something that is a waste of time. Yeah. Like where does that come from?
So what's interesting, there was the moment, and this is sad to ask, but there was a moment when you stopped going to the playground. There was the last time you went to the playground. Like you, and you didn't know that was going to be the last time you went. So when people ask me, why do adults not play as much? Yeah. And I reference the study around the fact of 148,000 no's. By the time you reach the age of 18, you have heard the word no at least 148,000 times. And then in comparison, you've heard the word yes between 8 to 10,000 times. So first, we have to have a certain level of compassion for ourselves that is the world we're part of. Then think about it. You go to school where you're told to raise your hand all the time. You're told to ask for permission. And then parents and adults are constantly shooting on you. You should do this. You should major in this. You know, you should do this when you grow up. And you're like, I'm six. Why are you giving me advice at six? You should do. And then you get to your teen years, and especially teenagers now, where social media is constantly telling you that you should be anyone but yourself. Be this influencer, be this person, but don't be you, right? Yeah. And then anytime you are yourself, you're told you're too much, too mischievous, too weird. Why do you want to write a book? Ugh, why do you want to be a writer? That's never going to make you money. Like, you constantly are hearing all of this, that it's such a rebellious act for somebody to play. For someone to be like, yeah, I am going to be a writer. Yeah, I am going to start a podcast. Yeah, I am going to make ridiculous videos just for the sake of making them. Because everyone else is telling you not to be you. So we have to recognize that is what we're up against when we are trying to identify what is our play.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, because I teach high school, and so I think back to, I teach English also. So there are high school kids that when they write, they feel very apprehensive because of what they've been told by teachers about their writing, you know, since like first grade sometimes. Oh. And it's kind of sad how when you're probably in kindergarten, maybe even, you know, I guess you're not writing at preschool level, but when you first start writing, it's probably like this really fun experience. Oh. But then you get all this criticism throughout the years, and writing just becomes this laborious, boring, scary task that you have to do. And so that's what, it's very similar, I guess, just not for writing, but just life in general. If you get so much criticism throughout the years and people saying like, no, you can't, you're not worthy, you're not good enough, you're not blah, 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 blah. And so that can dampen the play. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
It can so much dampen the play. And I'm trying to pull up this image. Let me say, oh yeah. So I'll send this to you afterwards. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. But it was this writer named Alexandra Penfold. And she wrote this post, and it said, this weekend I sorted through some papers my mom saved from my childhood. The top one is my fourth grade self-evaluation. The bottom, my fourth grade state test score. And it shows that this student is minimally proficient in writing. And she got a 4 out of 8, right? Mm-hmm. And then she wrote in there as a little kid, I love to write. I hope to become an author one day. Mm. So she wrote that, and then she got her fourth grade self-evaluation that told her that she shouldn't be a writer. And then the last sentence in her tweet is, Random House published my sixth book last week.
Wow.
Like, we have to to recognize who is telling us what we can and cannot do, right?
Right.
Ken Robinson, remember Ken Robinson's story in his TED Talk, where he talked about how, you know, this person was told that she couldn't sit still.
Right.
And
told
her to go to a psychiatric ward. Mm-hmm. And then they told the parents were like, what's wrong with her? And the guy's like,
there's nothing wrong with her. She's just a dancer.
Exactly.
Just a dancer. That's just who she is. Mm-hmm. And then she ends up creating Cats. Mm-hmm. So we have to, again, be really recognizing what are the limitations we're putting on others? Mm-hmm. What are the shoulds we're putting on others? And then also, more important, what are the shoulds we're putting on ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth Gilbert also says this, which I really love. Personal transformation doesn't happen until you get tired of your own BS.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the BS that I've been telling myself. I can never be a writer. I can never make blogs. I can never make any money doing this. Well, is that true or not? Mm-hmm. Why don't we at least experiment and find out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So there. Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment, because I'm sure there are going to be people that are going to say, well, we have to, criticism has to exist. Like, you need criticism to grow. So how do we, is that true? First, do you believe that's true? And how do we then take the criticism? Is there a way to take criticism and make play out of criticism for the sake of growth? Because can we just keep telling people, like, for example, for the kid that, for the author that right now got a 4 out of 8, perhaps like when she was younger, she did need some constructive criticism, and maybe perhaps the criticism that she was given was not necessarily constructive. It was just like, oh, you suck. Right. But if someone gets that type of criticism that's not constructive, how do we then take that and turn it into something positive so that we can continue to grow and find play within that?
So my belief is that we have all the answers that we need, right? And if you ever get advice and that advice resonates with you, the only reason it resonates with you is because you've already told yourself that advice before. You're just reminding yourself, like that person is just reminding you. That person is a, like as my friend Jen Ables would say, is a character in your world that has shown up solely to drop that message, right? They're dropping that message of like, hey, you're dope. And then they move on, right? So if it doesn't resonate with you, then don't listen to it. Frankly, I mean, honestly. But again, you have to own your own BS of like, is this person saying something that actually really matters to me? Or are they saying this advice for themselves? Mm. Because I think a lot of times people are constantly giving advice that is for themselves. And here's advice that I have to take myself many times. It's like, if you ever feel compelled that you have to give advice to somebody, don't. Just don't. Because that advice is for you. That advice is for you. Yeah. You're like, you have to write. You have to like make your next book. Whoa. That person doesn't have to do anything. Don't put all that anxiety on them. You tell yourself that.
Right.
Because I've seen it, man. Oh, and it's so sad. I know people who are phenomenal writers, phenomenal, but they instead spend more time thinking about shooting on others and hating on others, and that creativity that they could have used for writing has manifested into drama in their life.
Mm.
And it's like, you could have channeled that drama.
Right.
And they say this, when you don't have a creative outlet, it then produces in a toxic way. Right. So for like a writer, like you need to play. You need to get this out. Mm-hmm. And you can either get it out in a dramatic way where like, let me have fights with everyone in my life, or let me put this in my writing and create a piece of writing that is going to have a ripple effect on so many other people's lives, because I'll be speaking a truth that also resonates with other people's truth.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great advice. And you know, that's so true. If you don't get your creativity out in a healthy way, it just starts to fester inside you and cause all kinds of nonsense. It can even cause like physical pain and suffering within your body if you don't get it out properly. So, and then another good point you made is in this, when you talk about giving advice to others and how that advice is usually for ourselves, because we're each other's mirrors. And so usually if I see you not living up to what I believe is your potential and it's bothering me, It's because I can see myself in you. Like, oh, I'm not living up to my, you see me? Yeah. So that's so interesting.
Why is it bothering me? Why is it bothering me so much what this other person is doing, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Back to like, are you claiming who you are or are you chasing your worth? Are you trying to people please somebody else?
Yeah, exactly. Jeff, what does, when you go to these corporate workspaces, what does play look like there? Because I can just see a lot of resistance with some of these companies when you talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah. So these companies hate the word play, but they love the word flow. Okay. They love the word flow. They love to figure out, and I say this to team leaders all the time, what you should be doing right now, if you want to keep your staff, because your staff is looking for other jobs. Just a reality check, you know, because 85% of people at work are disengaged at work. That was the study done by, I believe, Forbes before the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you should be finding out what is the work that they love to do most. What is the work where they forget about time? Because if you're able to have them do that work, it again has a ripple effect on all of the other work they do. They're much more productive. They're much more engaged. And if you're like, well, I don't believe that, blah, blah, blah. Look at Google. Google did their 20% rule, their 20% program, where they gave their staff a fifth of their time to pursue whatever they wanted. Anything they wanted, as long as it helped the business of Google out. And that's where AdSense, Google, Gmail, Google Meet, billion-dollar ventures that Google now builds their entire organization off of, was allowing their staff to follow their curiosity and play. Mm. So like, it's been proven if you give people the freedom, and you may not be able to give people a fifth of their time to pursue it, but you can give your staff 5% more. Mm. You could be like, well, what do you love to do? Oh, I love writing blog posts for the company. What percentage of time do you do that? Oh, it's only 5% of your time. Mm. Is there any way we can increase that by 10%? Mm. That will have an exponential value, not only to the organization, but then that person will be like, hey, that person sees me, my boss sees me as me, and they care about me enough to help me do the work that makes me come alive.
Right, right. You know, that's so powerful, because it reminded me of when I was in middle school. You know how horrible middle school can be. It's like the worst years ever.
But I have a whole story about it, my most embarrassing time, and it was in middle school.
Oh, yeah. And you're not alone, I'm sure. So, but there's one wonderful experience about middle school that I just, it's like the one thing that pops in my head, actually, when I think of middle school, that the good thing first and then the bad stuff. And this good thing was that one day a week, I think they did started doing this in my second year of middle school, but they had what's called a PAC class, PAC, preferred activity class. And it was, we could choose from this list of all of these different activities that you would not find in a regular academic catalog, like origami. There's a classic film class. There was, drawing, painting, all kinds of stuff. And I took a classic film, and I took sign language, and origami. And those were just in the PAC class was maybe 20 minutes. It was just like 20 minutes out of the whole week, but it just made middle school so much fun. Oh, I loved it. Gosh. And I wish that more schools would do stuff like that, because today it's just all academic based, like study, 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 math, science, English, blah, blah, blah. No, hardly any fun. And the kids are burned out and the teachers are burned out and everyone is exhausted. And ugh.
So exhausted. My sister's an English teacher. Yeah. You know, my other sister teaches junior high, and it's just like, what happened with education? In my opinion, I thought the goal of education was that when people graduated, they still wanted to learn. Like, isn't that the whole point? Right. Is fascinated with life, but instead, we're making education so not enjoyable.
Right, yeah.
I'm not saying like entertain. I'm not saying edutainment. Yeah. I'm saying, can we provide more context, right? Mm-hmm. Can we show a kid what's it like to actually be a writer? You know, imagine, I met a homeschool kid once. He was 10 and he had already wrote 4 books. And I was like, what do you mean you wrote 4 books? And they were like
They're just 30-page books, but they were books.
Yeah, yeah.
But by the time he was 10 years of age, he believed he could write books for a living. Mm. You know, and that's what I feel education is all about, this showing kids what is possible and how dope and amazing they are. But a lot of education, and this, I feel so bad for so many teachers, they don't have time to do that until like maybe the last 2 weeks of, right, of class, when everything's over, when all the state standard testing is over, mm-hmm, to be like, I think you're a dope, amazing child with so much potential, and here's how I want you to explore that.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. It's really a shame. And I hope one day education takes a turn toward actually teaching the entire child and not just focusing so much on putting everyone on one path to college, because there are so many other paths that kids might want to explore.
And also the other part that's really challenging, yeah, and helpful is it's so results oriented. It's so, mm-hmm, grade based. Mm-hmm. And what happens is expectations are the thief of joy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you put so much pressure on so many of these kids to get certain grades and they don't, yeah, get them,
yeah,
that's why higher depression levels, that's why, yeah, there are higher suicide levels. And the thing is like, results never bring you happiness.
Mm-hmm.
You simply have to look at Michael Phelps' documentary, just came out, 22 gold medals, all the money in the world, went into depression right after because he was, mm, so results oriented. Anthony Bourdain, same, mm, thing. Everyone wants Anthony Bourdain's job. You travel the world, you eat food. Also went into depression. Your happiness, your actual joy and fulfillment isn't in the result. And I'm trying to teach that to as many students as possible, but it's in like the present moment. It's in the play. It's in the flow.
Yeah.
So that's why play is so important, is
right,
because how can you enjoy later on? And I say this to a lot of students, like, I know rich people, I know affluent people, I know huge Instagrammers, I know famous people, mm-hmm, not that happy, just not that happy.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, like they have this affluent deadness in their eyes,
mm,
like where they can buy anything in the world. They can travel anywhere in the world and they look scared. They,
yeah,
either look scared like they're going to lose all their stuff, they're going to lose all their followers. They look scared because they might only have 5 million followers, but someone has 10 million followers.
Right.
Or they look scared because they thought when they reached a certain echelon, everything would work out and their life would be amazing, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the audacity to post on Instagram saying how happy they are, and they're not that happy.
Right.
They're not that happy.
Mm-hmm.
So then they're selling a lie to us, and then we're trying to get back up there, and then nobody's happy where they're at, right?
Yeah.
We simply need to play more in order to be present and find fulfillment and joy in the present moment.
So do you remember Good Will Hunting?
Robin Williams. Was that Robin Williams?
And David Ben Affleck.
Yes, yes.
Right. So at the end of that movie, for anyone that hasn't seen it, at the end of the movie, Matt Damon is a genius and he can have any job he wants,
mm-hmm,
you know, because he's like this actuary, just this math genius. And he's sitting at a construction site with his best friend, Ben Affleck, and they're working construction. And Ben asks Matt, like, you know, when are you going to take one of these high paying jobs? And Matt's like, I'm not, you know, I'm going to work construction. We're going to raise our kids together. We're going to watch them play baseball at Foley Field. And, you know, that's just what I'm going to do. And Ben turns to him and he's like, if I see you here in 20 years, I'm going to kill you. Like, I'm literally going to kill you. And Matt's like, oh, what? I owe it to myself? And he's like, no, you don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me. And you owe it to everyone else at this construction site that would give anything. I mean, anything to have what you have. You're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. And you're too scared to cash that in. And for each and every one of your listeners, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. And the thing is you're not cashing it in for yourself. This is not about you. It's about the fact that when you show up, other people can show up.
Mm.
So when Ebony is like, I'm starting this podcast, I'm putting myself out here, mm, taking this risk.
Mm-hmm.
She showed up and now has given me a platform to do this. Now I'm sharing this message with you. And now as you, as a writer, or you doing your thing. It's time for you to do your thing, because the world can't do their thing until you do your thing.
Mm.
So my question to you is, are you ready to show up?
Jeff Harry, this has been a wonderful conversation. So much, so much more to explore here. Goodness. Tell us where we can find you, Jeff.
So you can find me at rediscoveryourplay.com. Simply click the Let's Play button, where I have a bunch of play experiments to figure out who you are, as well as ones you can do, you know, at work. And then let's hop on a call and figure out how you can kick ass in this world by playing more.
That's great. And I saw that you have a play directory, which I thought was so wonderful.
With all of my play community, because there's so many people in the world that nobody knows about. And so I wanted to highlight all these amazing people.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for joining me, Jeff. This has been wonderful.
I'm pretty sure after that conversation, although I can't exactly remember, but I'm pretty sure after I had that conversation with Jeff, I did something fun. I did some play. Maybe I probably went and took a walk at the park or something, but that's just the kind of energy that he has. He just makes you want to have fun. So I hope that you can find the time to infuse play in your day-to-day, infuse play into your day-to-day, because it really does help to de-stress, and it's just a healthy way to let go of any of the toxicity that is in your body. Please give Jeff a call if you're interested in coaching or having him come speak at your workplace. Check out his social media also. And in the meantime, be sure to check out zazel.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. You can follow me at Motivation to Write on Instagram and Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter at Ebony Haywood. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Next week, I have marketing expert Haley Kalini. So I am very excited for that. I hope that you join me then. And in the meantime, have a wonderful, playful week. Okay, see you next time. Bye-bye.